वर्स नंबर 3, सत्वानुरूपा सर्वस्य श्रद्धा भवति भारत, श्रद्धामयोऽयं पुरुषः यो यच्छ्रद्धा स एव सः। So sattva, here sattva does not mean this sattva, does not mean the knowledge or the purity. Here sattva is used as nature, as antakarana. Antakarana is the inner equipment. In our scripture say that we have four antakarana, four inner equipments: mind, intellect, ego and memory. So this is my antakarana. Of course the bahya karana is this body, this outer karana is this body that is visible. But this body is guided by my antakarna, that is mind, mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar. Mind, intellect, ego and memory. So these four determine all my actions. So here sattva, when Krishna is saying, he's talking about the antakarna, about the inner nature, the inner equipment, antakarna we have written over there. So he says, sattvanurupa, anurupa, according to the inner antakarna, according to my nature, sarvasya, of all people, everybody in this world, shraddha bhavati bharata, O Bharata, O Arjuna belong to the Bharata family, you know, the Bharata dynasty, that's why he's called Bharata, like Ramchandraji was called Raghuvamsha, because he belonged to the Raghu dynasty. So here it is says, Bharata, O Arjuna, who belongs to the Bharata dynasty. Put Shraddha Mayo Yam Purusha. I am, this Purusha is Shraddha Maya. Shraddha Maya means he is what is Shraddha is. Yo Yat Shraddha Sa Eva Saha. So this individual is Shraddha Maya. That means like a gold necklace. It's called Swarnamaya, right? A gold necklace, if it is not dipped in gold, but it is made of solid gold, is nothing but gold and gold. It is called Swarnamaya. Like Gujarati tea is called Sugarmaya. That's what Swami Ishwarananda ji is, his word. So because it is full of, there is nothing else but sugar in it. So similarly, I am Shraddha Maya, means whatever my Shraddha is, so I am. Whatever my inner equipment is, whatever my nature is, because the nature determines the Shraddha, and then Shraddha further strengthens the nature. How is that? Like the vasanas, my tendencies decide my Shraddha, decide my, what is my belief, what is called the inner core belief of your personality, which drives you. Like a freedom fighter, what is his goal in life? Oh, I must win freedom for the country. Even if jaan bhi chali jaye, even if I lose my life, even he will give up his wife and children and put all his effort. We find all these people like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi, they spend their whole life with one goal in life, one focus. So just as my nature, so is my faith, but then the faith further strengthens the nature. If I do activities in a particular direction, if I do good activities, then what it does, it strengthens my good vasanas. So my good nature becomes strengthened. So the Shraddha strengthens the nature, strengthens the sattva, strengthens the nishtha, what he believes in. So what I believe in, that's how I act, and as I act, it makes my belief stronger, it makes my tendency stronger. So it is a cycle, it is a cycle. As I believe, so I think. As I think, so I act. And as I act, so I strengthen my thoughts. So I strengthen my thoughts, so it makes my tendencies deeper. So that's why it is said, nature, faith. Faith again strengthens the nature. So that is how these people, they work in the world. They work with a particular focus, they work with a particular goal, And it is very interesting that a person who is strongly inclined towards rajas and tamas, he cannot understand sattva. You know, if a person is somebody like Julius Caesar, or a person like an industrialist or businessman who works 16 hours a day just to grow his business, you tell him, look, you know, you need to rest a little bit, spend some time with your family, maybe, you know, read the scriptures, learn to meditate, you know, learn to quieten your mind. You're all the time disturbed. You're taking sleeping pills to sleep, and then you're taking, you know, coffee and tea during the day to stay awake. Why don't you? No, no, that's for third-rate people. You know, meditation and all is for a waste of time. These monks who are sitting in the monasteries, they should be shot. And the food, because they're just consuming the food, they're not giving anything to society, and that money should be used for poor people. They don't realize that these people who meditate, who teach, contribute so much to society through teaching. Even if they don't teach, when they are meditating in that sattvic state, they are spreading beautiful vibrations that is nourishing this earth. They say the rain falls not for you or me. Rain falls for these Mahatmas. The ones who are sitting in the monasteries, who are sitting in the forests, who are sitting in the Himalayas, who are sitting and meditating, the rain is for them. The Lord is providing for them, and you and I just benefit from their activity. So, but a Rajasic person will never understand that. He'll say, these guys are just useless. You know, they just waste their time sitting. They should go out and work. This reminds me of a very beautiful story, a wonderful story. Swami Chinmayananda used to tell this story. He said there was this milkman. And so early he gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and he cleans his shed, you know, because the cows have made a mess. He has a large number of cows. And so he cleans the shed, he washes the cows, then he washes his pots and pans. And, you know, by that time it's 6, 7 in the morning. Then he milks the cows and he collects all that. Then he has his breakfast. And then around 8 or 9 o'clock, he's carrying, you know, two pots, you know, with the stick they used to carry. So he's carrying on heavy pots filled with milk down the road, in a country road. And he finds this man sitting on the bank of a lake. And he's very nice clothes, well-dressed, you know, beautiful. It seemed like a very educated man. And he's throwing pebbles in the lake. He has this collection of pebbles and he's throwing them. So, okay, he's doing that. So the milkman goes, he goes to the next village, and all day he's, you know, selling his milk and distributing it. And by the evening he has collected, you know, a small amount of money. He's not rich, he has some money. And then he's going back and he's counting, you know, now so much money I have. This much will go for feed for the cows. This much I have to pay rent on my shed. Now the cows I have bought on interest. So this is the interest I have to pay. So I'll hardly have enough rupees left to feed my wife and children. And that's how he's every day, 7 days a week. There's no Saturday, no Sunday. He's just working and barely enough money to feed his family, but that's his life. What can he do? So he's walking back. It's about 6 or 7 in the evening. It's about 9 hours have passed. And this guy is still there throwing pebbles, in the dropping pebbles in the lake. And he says, you know, such guys should be shot. You know, because he has worked hard all day, it's a hot day, he's sweating and he's angry. These guys are parasite on society. Look at the government, you know, why are they feeding such people? He's just wasting his time, and look at me, I'm working so hard, I'm doing, producing so much. And this guy is sitting and doing nothing. And not only that, but he was eating a sandwich. You know, this guy, he's eating a sandwich, I don't even have bread and butter. You know, these people are just parasite on society. And he's loudly cursing the government, he's cursing God, and he's even cursing that guy. But that guy is not listening. You know, he curses him loudly and he goes. You know, who was that person? He was Medici, and he actually was in his mind visualizing a beautiful painting. And this painting still hangs in Louvre several hundred years ago after he passed away. This painting shows the Mother Mary and the baby Christ, you know, sitting beside a lake. Beautiful painting. It's one of the world's masterpieces. And in that lake, you can see the ripples, you know, and when he was throwing pebbles, he was planning how the ripples should look on that painting, how the ripple should look. And the, you can see a gentle breeze blowing, and the, there is a lotus which is, you know, bending, and her hair is, you know, a little bit moving in the wind, fluttering, all in the painting. And the baby Jesus, his clothes are fluttering. And millions of people have seen that painting, and they are so inspired. Some think it's a great piece of art. Some look at the color. Some look at the details. Some look at the devotion. Look how much devotion this artist had for Jesus and the mother. And this milkman, what happened to him? He worked for a few years, then he got old. He sold his cows, he moved to the city where his children were. He moved to the city and he died. Now the milkman might think that this guy was wasting his time, but whose contribution is more? Who has contributed more to the world? I'm not saying that the milkman didn't work. We're not saying that. But you cannot judge a person's activity just because he's, you know, working and he's sweating. No, these great thinkers, you know, these great scientists working in the laboratory, you know, they work for a few hours. He's in a nice air-conditioned laboratory. All the food is provided. He's getting grants and all. You might think he's wasting his time, but the next great invention might come out from there. The next great, you know, there may be the next Bill Gates or the next, you know, Galileo or the next, you know, you don't know the next great author. You know, people who are authors, they are sitting there and they're just thinking, and you say, oh, this guy is wasting his time. But he may be composing a great piece of poetry like Shakespeare or Keats or, you know, Premchand.
Tagore,
right? And millions of people are inspired. And so just because a person is not working in our sense, it does not mean that the person is useless. The sattvic activities require a lot of thinking. The example is like a Supreme Court judge. You know, a Supreme Court judge, if you see, they actually work 3 days a week and 3 months in the year. Actually, when they hear cases, it's only 3 months in the year. And you'll say, oh, these guys are being paid a six-figure salary and getting a nice house and getting and a socialist, you know, guy will say, you know, these guys, 3 days they work, 4 days they should be building roads. You know, that's what people think. But what a Supreme Court judge is doing, the 4 days he's not working, he's thinking how the Constitution will be affected by this case. And how important, you know, like the abortion case or the Miranda case or the civil rights cases that the Supreme Court justices decided. Civil rights was decided in 64. Even today it is helping us. The abortion where, you know, woman's right to have the Wade versus Roe, that case was in the early 70s. But even today, it's having ramifications. So these people who are thinkers, who are, you know, their effects are far more. So you cannot judge a rajasic person, cannot judge a sattvic person by his own vision. He has to change his vision and think that these people make a major contribution to society. It's not only the people who are digging the ditches. I mean, that's very good. I mean, we need people to dig ditches and build roads and farmers and milkmen. But we also need intellectuals, we need thinkers, we need research scholars, we need PhDs, we need leaders. And that's what the mistake sometimes people make. If you have ever been to Cambodia, we were last year, 2 years back, Swamiji took us on a trip. And my God, it is so sad what you see, what happened. This Pol Pot was a crazy guy. He was a communist and a socialist. And he had this army called Khmer Rouge, the Red Army. And they basically said that the whole country should become socialist. So all the university professors, the intellectuals, the scholars, the government workers, you know, all the bureaucrats, everybody was dismissed. They say, you all have to become farmers. So they all were forced to leave their city, to leave their house and march for hundreds of miles. Okay, you are assigned to a village 100 miles away. Another one is assigned to a village 200 miles. And this poor guy has never worked in his life. I mean, he has worked, but in an office, never worked in a farm. So millions, 2 million people died. He actually set back his country 40 to 50 years back because anything that was institution was destroyed by him. No scholars, no educated people, no bureaucrats, no Nothing. He said everybody should become a farmer. What kind of stupid thinking is that? Why? Because these guys are just wasting their time sitting in their research offices. And if you go to Cambodia, they have a place where you can see thousands of skulls. They've actually preserved in one glass enclosure. I have the picture on my phone. Thousands and thousands. And this was, there's only one. He actually killed several million people.
One third
the population of the country was destroyed, just killed, just slaughtered, because they couldn't walk. If somebody has to walk 200 miles, they're very poor arrangement for food, water, nothing. And the army is just making them walk, and they just died on the way, and they didn't care. So that's what they are saying, that these people, and then I talked about monks. So one has to see that we need all kinds of people. We need people who are laborers. We need people who are businessmen, who are industrialists. We need people who are leaders of the community, politicians, you know, senators and congressmen. And we need research scholars. We need professors. We need teachers in the schools and colleges. So that's what makes the society. But if people think that I should get an eye for an eye, you know, I should get even, then all it does is make society uneven. Because I get an eye, somebody hurts me, I hurt him back, and then he gets hurt, and he hurts me back. And that's what is happening. That's what is happening throughout the world. One of the commentaries I was listening to Swami Shantanandaji, he talked about the importance of learning Sanskrit. It's not directly related, but it talks about sattva. So he says that in one of the Bal Vihars, they started teaching Sanskrit. And so they would have a Sanskrit teacher who would come every week. And so one mother asked, and a couple of the parents, what is the use of learning Sanskrit? It's a waste. It's a dead language. If you want to teach Spanish, you know, or teach French, at least they will benefit. At least they will get a job, or it will help them, make them bilingual. Sanskrit is a dead language. Why are you wasting your time? And Swamiji says, Sanskrit, if you even learn a little bit about it, it's such an impressive language. It's so scientific that it is the only language in the world that is used in the computers. Because it is completely scientific. There is no exceptions there. It is all strictly follows the rules. It's not but but and put put. There is nothing like that. Sanskrit is so precise, so well organized. And not only that, but once you study Sanskrit, you can appreciate the beauty of your scriptures. It changes your thinking. That's the beauty of this marvelous language. And that's what our rishis thousands of years ago came up. And all the world's languages evolved from Sanskrit. If you look at all the Indian languages, you know, Hindi and Telugu and Tamil and Kannada, they all have Sanskrit words. The basic of grammar that is there in Sanskrit is so beautiful. And even a lot of the Western languages have so many Sanskrit words, like matra, you know, in Sanskrit is mother in English. Mutter in a German, madre in French. So you cannot just judge something by its utility. Oh, will it help my son to get a job, or will I get more money if I learn Sanskrit? No, you won't. But you will evolve. So that is what the sattvic activities do that. And then people say, you know, like, when you read the scriptures, you know, Shraddha, talking about Shraddha, I was listening to another one. He says, from Shraddha comes the word Shraddh. Shraddh is what we offer to our parents. You know, they have a certain day when they passed away, you offer food to the Brahmins, and then you offer prayers. And it is said those prayers reach, you know, the gods, and the food reaches them. So what kind of nonsense is that? I'm feeding somebody here, and the person died, you know, 40 years ago or 30 years. No, it's actually, they said that suppose you are going somewhere and suddenly you get a meal that you were not expecting. Somebody, you go somewhere and somebody says, "Arey, baith jao yaar, sit down and have lunch." And somebody gives you a meal you were not expecting. Your son or grandson in the somewhere has done a shraddh for you. So it is very scientific. You may not believe it. You may say it is just nonsense. You know, it's just these pundits have made all these rules just to earn more money. No, it is very scientific. This is because we are not only this gross body, we are a subtle body too. And we take multiple births. So these all things that we, in the scriptures, what they have is all belief. And then they talk about punya and papa, you know, merit and demerits. And in life, in the scriptures, they describe there are two kinds of results. If I do a good action or a bad action, one is the immediate result. Like if I study for an exam, I'll pass. If I don't study, I'll fail. Or if I work hard, I will succeed. But then there are subtle or unseen effects of actions. You know, not only actions, but even thoughts. If I have angry thoughts, if I have negative thoughts, I'm creating negative karmas. And that's creating punya and papa, merits and demerits. So that is what we have to watch out, not only on my actions, but also on my thoughts, because ultimately the thoughts also have their own repercussions. So I have to be very conscious of what I think. But we find in this modern world, not only people are rajasic, even nations are very rajasic. You know, the whole goal of life is to acquire more weapons. In fact, the Roman Empire, they had a very famous line. He said, if you want peace, prepare for war. This was their belief. If you want peace, prepare for war. The idea was that have so many weapons that nobody will dare to attack you, and so there will be peace. But that's you know, foolish. It's like nowadays people say have so many nuclear weapons so that Russia has so many and America has so many. So if Russia attacks, America will destroy it, Russia. So they are both stockpiling nuclear weapons, that nuclear weapons will buy peace. That's foolish. Because what's going to happen sooner or later, somebody is going to by mistake release it. Or what another thing will happen is these nuclear weapons will end up in the hands of terrorists. You know, what we saw in Paris is nothing. Once imagine if one of them gets, and already Iran and all those guys are making nuclear weapons, and this deal we signed is only going to delay it by 10 years. In 10 years, Iran is going to have full-fledged nuclear weapons, complete. And they are the ones who are creating problems in half the world. And so what's going to happen? Some terrorist is going to get hold of a nuclear weapon, and then Paris will be nothing. It won't be 100. It'll be 100,000 people. You know, whole cities will be wiped out. And so just by that, so we think by accumulating more weapons, we'll buy peace. They say if you want to peace, prepare for peace, not prepare for war. Our whole thinking is messed up. The whole, it's not only the individual, but even nations, even societies. And the United States is the world's leader. Not only we produce the most weapons, we sell the most weapons. We sell to both sides. We sell to Arabs and we sell to Israel. So let them fight. And who is making money? The United States. Because when they are using the weapons on each other, US is the number one supplier of weapons in the world. You know, of course, Russia makes weapons, Germany does, Britain does, France does, but it's nothing compared to what we do. So it's foolish to think that by creating more weapons, we are going to buy peace. So they say you have to change your methods, you have to change your thinking. Your thinking has to become peaceful. And let us destroy the weapons, let us reduce them, let us create disarmament. But what we are doing, the typical rajasic activities consume more and more resources, more and more, bigger and bigger cars, bigger and bigger houses, faster cars. It is said that it took 3 billion years to create petroleum. To create petroleum on the earth took 3 billion years. God up there has been working for 3 billion years. In 100 years, we have utilized most of the world's petroleum. We have finished it. In the last 100 years, we have already consumed. There is not much petroleum left. In a few years, it will be finished. And same thing with the coal. And then they say, petroleum is gone, coal is gone, we'll use nuclear energy. Nuclear energy is efficient, but it is so scary. Because the nuclear, once the fuel burns out and creates that fuel, you have to keep it stored for a million years. For the radioactivity to go out, it'll take a million years. So people think that nuclear energy is the solution. Nuclear energy is a problem because where are you going to store it? They used to store it in Nevada. Now Nevada says, we don't want any more of this, you know, spent fuel waste. Find some other place. There's no place on earth. Where are you going to put it? Eventually, no matter how strong your vault is, the nuclear energy is going to break through that. and it's going to pollute the air, pollute the water, pollute the earth, pollute the crops, pollute the fish. You say put it in space, there's already so much junk in space. Are you going to put it in Mars or Moon? Where are, it's so expensive. So the solution is green, to live green, you know, consume less energy, buy smaller cars, more efficient cars, let me contribute, let me, you know, not waste. Actually, you know, there's a story of the prodigal son in the Bible about this father who gave a lot of money to his son, and the guy just went and spent it and wasted it, and then he came back apologizing and crying, and then the father took him back. I think there's a story in the Bible about the prodigal son. But here it is the prodigal father. We are destroying our children's future. We are polluting the earth, we are polluting the water, we are consuming the resources, just making bigger and faster and more, you know, just consumption. So creating global warming, some people say there is no such thing as global warming. There is. We are destroying the glaciers and destroying the snowpacks. And why? Because of uncontrolled rajas. So rajas has to be modified by sattva. I have to think not only what is good for me, but what is good for my children and grandchildren and the great-grandchildren who are not yet born. They all need to live. They all need a place to live. And this earth is the only home we have. We can't destroy that. But that is what rajas does. Uncontrolled rajas only causes destruction. Only rajas is necessary. I'm not saying that we don't need to produce, we don't need to work. But it has to be reasonable. It has to be mixed with some logical thinking. You know, that's what all the countries are talking about. You know, not producing more and greenhouses and all. But nobody is doing anything. It's just they're having seminars and conferences and all that. So that is that's what Sri Krishna says, that not only an individual is what his Shraddha is, but even a nation is what their Shraddha is. What do they believe in? Ya yat Shraddha sa eva saha. So that is what. So this is basically a background of what is sattva, rajas and tamas. And then now the rest of the chapter, Sri Krishna will give us concrete examples of what is rajasic activity, what is sattvic, what is tamasic, what kind of diet, what kind of activity, what kind of gods do they worship, how do they sacrifice, how do they do rituals, how do they do austerities. So the idea is that by reading this chapter, we have to see within ourselves, again, not to point finger at maybe America or Russia, or that am I contributing my share towards making this world a better place? Am I becoming more sattvic in my thinking? Am I becoming more pure? Am I becoming more unselfish? From selfishness to unselfishness. So from tamas to sattva. That is the whole idea of studying this chapter. It's a very practical chapter which we can apply from tomorrow itself. From today itself, I can apply. So that's actually the Gita, that's like that. Any verse you pick up anywhere out of the 700, they're all so beautiful. It's really our privilege that we have people like Swami Chinmayananda and all who have translated this for us. Any comments? Yes.
You said Shraddha is given when you see the parents, but of their parents has gone into some other body because of the multiple births, as you said. Then whom are you offering the Shraddha to?
The Shraddha you offer to that person.
The spirit of that
is in a different it's okay, but that individual is still there. The mind, intellect and vasanas are still there, just the body has changed.
That's right, the body is gone. Yes. But the spirit of that body has gone into some other body. Then if you are offering the Shraddha to that spirit, you are offering for the lively person now, indirectly, right?
Yes, either he may be alive or he may be still in the heavens.
We don't know
where he is. But it's just faith. You just believe in that.
So the next thing.
I mean, it's not something that we have to do, but that's what they recommend. But yeah, go ahead.
And then the next thing is the same Brahmins would say if you do the final Shraddha in Brahma Kapal, they don't have to do it anymore. Okay, the third thing is Only how come the Hindus only believe in this concept, which is only make up about 800 billion people in the world? What about the remaining 7 billion or 6 billion people who don't do the same thing?
No, but they do. You know, if you remember, if you go to the graves, go to Green Lawn and all, people go there and put flowers. They say, my father is buried here, my mother. The body is already eaten up by the worms. Nothing is there. It's just, body is gone. But they believe that my father is here, my mother is here. So they offer flowers, they go up, put food there. They actually put food and all, right? Don't they do that? But yeah, when you go there, you find a lot of things. Flowers, yeah. So it is the same thing, you know, that you honor your ancestors and you remember them, because ultimately why we are here because of our ancestors, father, grandfather, great. So you express your gratitude to them and honor them and respect them.
And
that is the whole.
Worship is very big in Chinese and Native
right.
American.
Yes, Chinese, Native American, they all worship their ancestors. In fact, they say the ancestors are the one that are guiding us and protecting us. So it is just a way of honoring or respecting, whatever method you choose. The idea is you respect and honor your parents. I mean, whether they get fed or not is not important. It's that you because why am I here? Because my father and mother gave me birth. And then why, and my grandfather and great grandfather. And whatever we learned is from our ancestors, our knowledge.
I agree, that's the basis of creation anyway.
Yes.
Creation has to start nobody should
feel,
right?
Right, right. But it's just a way of tradition. I don't know if you don't believe in it, it's okay, but that's what the scriptures say.
It's not
I don't
belief,
know.
But it's an understanding.
Right.
And why is one place, you know, like as I said, from Kapalika for the final shot, they don't have to do it anymore. So where is this suddenly change?
Again, I don't know. Again, you know, I'm not an authority actually on the Puranas. I have not studied too much. I only little bit I know is the Gita. Right? I don't know all these scriptures, but it's given there, so I just mentioned it again. You know, it was just, you know, as that, you know, that one, just an anecdote. Right? Thank you for bringing it up. Yes.
So, but then if someone makes that and either sell it or produce it, then does he produce it? That
No, I think again, what is his motive when he's producing? See, a lot of times creativity can only come when you're in a sattvic mood.
Right.
If you are not in a sattvic mood, the creative food. But then obviously they have to survive too, and artists and singers, you know, they are the ones who are poorest in society. So it's okay if they sell it. But so I think, no, I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, and another thing is that way they are sharing. Suppose there's a beautiful poem, you know, or a song, and, you know, it is marketed and a lot of people hear it. So and then it becomes somewhat a rajasic activity because then he's acquiring money for it. But it's still, you know.
So overall, you cannot be sattvic all the time.
No.
That's why we are all combinations.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Because we use the
right. In fact, in the 14th chapter, Sri Krishna says that there are certain times when sattva is predominant. Rajas and tamas are low. Sometimes when rajas, even in the time of the day, I talked last week.
Says that, you know,
right.
Different times,
right. Absolutely. Like when you wake up in the morning, your mind is very pure, it's very sattvic.
Brahma Murta.
And then you go to work, then it becomes rajasic. And then at night you sleep, it becomes tamasic. But the idea is, what is your predominant motivating force throughout the day? Is it sattva, rajas or tamas? And you will see more and more in this chapter how we can, the diet, activity, everything can be made more sattvic. But that's true. Creativity comes only when you're in sattva. Think about it.
I was just thinking, when you're talking about values, don't change generally over a lifetime.
Right.
Yeah, when she said about creativity, you know, what reminded me was about Tagore. I was just recently reading Gitanjali. It is a prayer, actually.
Right.
It's a beautiful poem and a prayer. And then from he won the Nobel Prize, that's more rajasic. And then he established the university and everything with that. Shanti,
mm-hmm.
What is it?
Shanti Niketan. And that's a very sattvic activity. When you, a university of learning, it's a pure sattva, where so many people are benefiting from it.
Till today.
Yes, till today. And like you are still inspired, you know, Tagore passed away so many years. So that's why these authors and these poets, you know, Shakespeare, and so many people are studying all that. Keats and, you know, all these Premchand, all these great poets, and Kalidas, you know, everywhere we find.
Yeah.
Tulsidas and all. Yes. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkham Agbhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri.